to South America and by shortwave overseas. Let's go to France.
Transmitting to the world.
Well, here I is, boys and girls. Terrible Tommy back in the bunker. Yeah, back in a bunker. Beautiful day here in Indiana. A little cooler, though. Supposedly, some places tonight's supposed to be down to 40s. Oh, man, that's pretty cool for this time of the year. Hey, it's June the 2nd, 2015, Tears Day. Yeah, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your money orders for the show or your donations for the show or PayPal or cash or checks. You name it. Yeah. Well, we got several people paid their donations already for this month. I appreciate that. And we had a question from one of our loyal people out there. They asked, whatever happened to Sling Blade? Well, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know whether he's still over in Illinois someplace or not. I know he's got family over there, but he just disappeared after that big flood hit his area and flooded his apartment or house or wherever he was living. And I never did get my books back and stuff like that, so I don't know what happened. But I'll tell you one thing, I won't play any more of his shows until I know what the score is with the guy, because he may have been a long-term agent. I have no proof he was or no proof he wasn't, but we did a lot of shows for a long time, and we had a lot of fun, but he has disappeared, at least for me. somebody must know where he's at. His family probably knows where he's at, but maybe he went down there after all his stuff got flooded and threw himself into the Chicago River. I don't know. I hope not. Well, that's the best I can tell you, boys and girls. But that's not real abnormal over the years. I've had a lot of contacts, a lot of associates, a lot of people who've helped me with the show, things like that. And they come and they go for one reason or the other, and sometimes they come back, and sometimes I never hear from them again. Well, I guess all those Texans that were underwater down there, Texicans, as my father used to call them, Texicans, they were all underwater. I guess they're starting to dry out now. I guess the big floods and everything have passed through. But I understood up until a couple of days ago that it was still flooding over in East Texas, but I'm not too sure of that. Did you see that picture somebody sent me of an atomic blast over in Yemen? I don't think it's made the rounds on the news yet, but somebody sent me a picture of it, and that sure as hell looked like a mushroom cloud to me that the Saudis have dropped on Yemen. I don't hear much talking, not even on the talk shows. I don't hear anything about it. Well, I see movie actor Tom Hanks' son, Chet, he's a rapper, and is not just the son of Oscar winner Tom Hanks. He's also a white guy trying to make a name for himself in the world of hip-hop. And apparently, at least according to Chet, he needs the N-word to do that. The 24-year-old routinely uses the nigger word on his Instagram account and yesterday defended the word's usage in a post. And this is what he said. "Look, I know the majority of y'all are not going to get this," unquote, he says in the Instagram video. Quote, "Beyond the history is still so fresh in our country, but hip-hop isn't about race, it's about the culture you identify with," unquote. Can't no one tell me what I can't say," the young MC said. Quote, "If I say the word nigga, I say it amongst people I love and who love me. And if I say fuck y'all hating ass niggas, that's because how I feel at the time. And I don't accept society getting to decide what anybody can or can't say. That's something we call free speech," he explains. Quote, "Now I understand older generation who grew up in the Jim Crow era might have strong feelings against this." Well, not most of the white people, unless they're chicken. "And that's understandable, but what I'm saying in this is 2015, and even if though we are still far from where we need to go and we need to be, nigger people are still being literally killed by a racist and fucked up system. And, of course, most of them are killed by each other. We have also reached a point where the word can no longer have a negative connotation if we choose to. And who's to say only black people can use it?" Yeah. Well, if it doesn't offend anybody, I'm not going to use it. According to Hanks, the term created by racist whites to demean blacks can have an empowering meaning if we allow it. Quote, "The way I see it, it's a word that unifies the culture of hip-hop across all races, which is actually kind of a beautiful thing. It's a word that can be used out of camaraderie and love, not just exclusively for black people. What's the point in putting all those built-up rules about it? It's time to let go. You can hate me or love me for it, but can't nobody tell me what I can or can't say. It's not nothing to do with trying to be a thug. It's about the culture and the music. And that's all I have to say about that. It's all love. Some people will get it, some people won't. Neither way, I'm keep a living my life however I fuck I want. All love." He's trying to sound like a nigger, I think. Even in print, he sounds like a nigger. Poor Tom Hanks. Poor boy. It's hard to keep sometimes a kid straight. If they decided to make nigger non-offensive, I don't want any part of the word. Because a lot of times I like to offend the black race. They deserve it, the things they do to white people. And I don't think we should worry about it. Well, 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 in what is threatening to become an annual ritual, two conferences in solidarity with the Donetsk and the Luhansk People's Republics, the DPR and the LPR, one aimed at the far right and one at the Stalinist left, took place last month. Last year, two such conferences, one for the right, one for the left, were staged by the same organization called Novaya Rus in the same hotel, Hotel Inn Tourist, in the same place, Yalta, in a matter of weeks. The left, hapless organizations such as the British Workers' Power Group, trying to explain why they teamed up with Russian chauvinists, Stalinists, and homophobes in an event staged by the organization which collaborated with fascists and the far right. Interesting. This year's conference were different. Although the rhetoric and the two conferences had much in common, they were not initiated by the same organization. The driving force behind the conference of the far right held in Donetsk on the 11th and 12th of May was the French MEP Jean-Luc Schaffhauser. The conference had first been announced by Schaffhauser at a press conference held in March of this year. Although never actually a member of the French National Front, Schaffhauser has won local and European Euro elections as a candidate on FN slates. He advocates lower business taxes, an anti-Muslim crackdown, and a multiculturalism workfare for the unemployed, and the welfare benefits only for those who have lived in France a long time. Code for not immigrants. Exploiting his long-standing links with Russian bankers and politicians, Schaffhauser played a central role in securing a loan for an FM from a Russian bank last September. Estimates of his commission on securing the loan, nearly 10 million euros, vary from 140,000 to 450,000 euros. The three other speakers at Schaffhauser's press conference, also attended the Donetsk conference itself, were Manuel Aschenreiter, Alessandro Mussolini, Molino, and Alien Fragni. Ochsenreiter has a long record of involvement in German right-wing politics. He's currently editor of the neo-Nazi magazine Zerst, which stands for the preservation of German ethnic identity and the life and the survival interests of the German people. The magazine attacks the legacy of denazification, carries interviews with Russian fascist Alexander Dugin, and denounces welfare immigrants and gypsy pickpockets. Aschenreiter also appears regularly on the pro-Putin Russia Today propaganda outlet. I must have seen him on there. Mussolino is a prominent member of the right-wing Forza Italia party, originally founded by Silvano Berlusconi as a vehicle for his own personal political ambitions. Mussolino monitored the Crimean referendum of March 2014 and the DPR-LPR elections of last November, despite the electoral irregularities manifest on both occasions. Mussolino and other right-wingers and fascists who act as monitors gave them a clean bill of health. Until 2013, Fragni was a member and Provence organizer of the French far-right bloc Identitaire, which represents itself as a rallying point for young French people and Europeans who are proud of their roots and heritage. Modeling itself on the Italian Riga Nord, and the BI opposes imperialism, whether it's American or Islamic, and has staged protests against immigration and Islamization of France, and supposed discrimination against white males. Some BI members also practice entryism into the FN. Fragney runs the nominal charity Urgent Infants Ukraine, UEU, and the UEU website largely consists of uncritical repeats of DPR and LPR propaganda, including praise for their military activities. By contrast, the website page entitled Current Missions simply reads, "To be announced soon." Fragney runs the UEU in partnership with Emmanuel Leroy. The latter was not present at the Schaffhauser's press conference in March, but he did attend the Donetsk conference. His political biography is the story of French fascist thought over the past years. He began political life as a member of the fascist think tank Research and Study Group for European Civilization, founded in the 1960s. Then he was a member of the FN for 28 years until the split in 1998, led by Bruno Magrat. But within a decade, he had returned to the FN fold. He's now probably the most important political influence, advisor, and speechwriter for FN leader Marine Le Pen. Well, that's a little strange, the way she's crossing the color fence lately. Marine Le Pen, I would not class as a racist. In fact, she's attacking her father and kicking him out of the party. Like Schaffhauser, Leroy has used his personal connections, family ties, involvement in Kremlin-funded think tanks, and attended the White Forum conference in Moscow, at which former Klan leader David Duke topped the bill to promote closer ties between the FN and Russia. Davey, you keep getting out of your league. But that's okay. In addition to Schaffhauser, Oskenreiter, and Muslino, Fragley, and Leroy, another dozen or so international guests attended the Donetsk conference, which included Johan Backman, Finnish Stalinist, historical revisionist, and apologist for Russian imperialism, has collaborated with Finnish neo-Nazi organizations and organized speaking tours for Russian fascists and chauvinists Alexander Dugin and Alexander Prokhovnov. Dragna Trifkovic, a member of the political council of the far-right Nationalistic Democratic Party of Serbia, believes Serbia is under foreign occupation and only victory for Russia in Novorossiya can end it. Cheerleader for Putin and admirer of Oschenreiter and Zerst. Markus Frohmeier, regional chair of the youth wing of the right-wing neoliberal alternative for Germany, anti-immigration, anti-integration, anti-gender quotas, supports Russian foreign policy, more rights for parents, especially in matters of sex education, and regression of the EU to the European Economic Community. Alexei Zaralabov, homophobic Duma member and ultra-nationalist, anti-Semitic, and xenophobic Rodina Party. Rodina supports the unity of Russian world and defense of the traditional values of Russian civilization. Rodino opposes illegal immigration, ethnic criminality, pro-Western liberal fascism, and traitors to the national interest, unquote. Simos Kedagloglu, member of the right-wing New Democracy Party, which imposed the Troika's austerity policies on Greece in the last term of office, as well as carrying out its own witch hunt of refugees and immigrants. Kedagoglu was the government spokesman who loyally defended all its actions. Among the names of lesser note attendees of the conference were Louis Dirdwalder, member of the South Tyrolean People's Party, and former governor of South Tyrol, Alessandro Bertoldi, member of the Forza Italia, Sveti Dejanski, former member of the Serbian Radical Party, and Andreas Velotti, Italian economist. Let's see here. Avinia Azawadou, former member of the Greek Communist Party and now Caesarea member of the Greek Parliament, and Martin Dolzer, Die Linke member of the German Parliament, also attended. Clearly, the politics of Stalinism is no obstacle to collaboration with the far right. Finally, and bad news for all Zionist supporters of the DPR and LPR, the conference was also attended by Michael Barkin, the Russian immigrant deputy mayor of the Israeli city of Afula, and a former member of the Yisrael Be'alia party, which merged with the Likud in 2003. Wow, this is getting complicated. Entitled International Forum Donbass, Yesterday, Today, Tomorrow, and attended by 400 people, overwhelmingly from the DPR and LPR, the Donetsk conference was officially supported and hosted by the DPR government. The LPR government likely officially supported the event and dispatched a large delegation, as well as giving the event wall-to-wall coverage on its website. As LPR head of state, Paul Nitsky, explained in March, quote, "Yes, we have received an invitation to attend, and our representatives will be in Donetsk. We will work together in this meeting. What we will have here is a war of two ideologies, fascist on the part of the Ukraine and ours." Wow, man. The so-called Federation of Trade Unions of the LPR, a trade union which lacks independence needed to make it a genuine trade organization, also sent a delegation to the conference and carried enthusiastic reports of the event on a website. Neither NPR, DPR, or LPR authorities could have claimed that they were unaware of the politics of their international guests. Eight of them, Schaffhauser, Ossenreiter, Muslino, Backman, Trifkovi, Zurloff, Bertoldi, and Dijensky, had been monitors for the Crimean referendum and for last November's elections in the DPR-LPR. Their role as monitors had been widely reported in the media internationally. Boy, this is getting deeper and deeper. The DPR-LPR did not welcome their international guests in spite of their politics, but because of them. Anti-US, anti-EU, anti-liberal, anti-imperialist, pro-Putin, pro-Russian, pro-nationalism, and for a multipolar New World Order. Their politics might have been and were reactionary through and through, but for the DPR and the LPR and their backers in Moscow, their far-right politics made them virtual allies of the DPR and the LPR, and it was precisely those far-right politics which found expression in contributions to the conference, not just from the international guests, but also from the representatives of the DPR-LPR. The conference began with a State of the World session. Stauffhauser was in his element. Quote, "My dream is not dream of America. In Paris, Berlin, Moscow, and Peking were to come together, then America would change into a small island. We are now building a new Europe. After the fall of communism, we now see the fall of liberalism, of the American model. And we must build a new model together. Here in Donbass, the fate of the entire European world is being decided. Here we must engage with the creation of our world, a multipolar world, because there is a war going on here." Unquote. Ossenreiter agreed with Schaffhauser. Quote, "The lack of European self-determination is dangerous, not just for Europe itself, but for the whole Eurasian continent. It prevents us from seeing our continent from Lisbon to Vladivostok as a community. The most important European project of the future is the complete de-Americanization of our continent. We are witnessing the first moments of the birth of a real multipolar world order and the end of unipolar Washington domination. The referendum in the Crimea and the unification with Russia gave an impressive example. The importance of the Crimea's unification with Russia was also stressed by Zurloff. In Washington, Brussels, and the Ukraine, they must understand that the Crimea has returned to Russia forever, that the republics DPR and LPR have become independent and will be so for a long time, possibly forever. Kiev needs to reconcile itself to living alongside the DPR and LPR and to get used to the fact that Crimea is a Russian land We're ready to fight for peace to the end, and that is until victory. Betraying his political origins, Alexander Dugin, fascist Eurasian youth movement. I wonder if that means mixed race youth movement. The chair of the DPR Soviet People's Soviet, Andrei Pergin, linked the resurgence of the Russian world to the emergence of the New World Order. Oh, not another one. Quote, the Russian Spring, which occurred a year ago, laid the basis for significant changes. Here now, the political discourse is being transformed. The Donbass is an experimental space of the Russian world. If you can hold it, it is possible that it will find a way of the cul-de-sac in which the entire world finds itself. New people now have the chance to build a new state. The change of elite is underway. Well, I'm afraid while you're doing that, the same old elite's still in power. Unless you have the ability to blast them out of there, things are not going to change that much. Instead of supporting Ukraine, which stands condemned and thrives to return to the past, the West should understand what is happening here and join the process of restoring health and world of the world organism, unquote. The second session of the conference dealt with the rebuilding the economies of the DPR and LPR. The contributions from the DPR-LPR speakers should serve as a sobering wake-up call for the left, which sees something progressive in the DPR-LPR. Quote, in practically all contributions to the creation of favorable conditions to conduct business was cited at the basic conditions of economic growth. To achieve this, the DPR had already taken a decision to reduce the tax burden on business. Quote, there's your first clue, boys and girls. There's your first clue. The minute they start saying they're going to reduce taxes on business, that's the code word for lowering taxes on the wealthy and the super rich, which is typically right wing. Some of the contributions were almost Thatcherite in emphasizing the ability of the DPR-LPR to stand on their own feet, according to the DPR head of state, Alexander Zakharchenko. Quote, look at how Poroshenko goes to the countries of Europe. He cries, holds his hands, and asks for money. We're not crying. What we are saying is, let us build up our trade relations. This allows them, Europeans, to understand what we want to build. We want to strengthen economic cooperation. In particular, we want to reach an agreement on exports of metal. One potential trading partner, cites at the conference, was Russia. According to Backman, what's important for trade is to find partners to agree and will work with whom, and support from Russia and trading links with Russia can help the new republics to stand on their feet. Wow. Velotti and Dernwalder spoke positively on the experience of autonomous region of South Tyrol in Italy. But as one report of the conference noted, enthusiasm about their contributions suddenly waned when the attendees learned that South Tyrol has no control over the police or defense and foreign policy. In another blow to the cause, anti-Zionism, one of the lessons of the conference summed up by the DPR Minister for Finances was, quote, we learned of the experience of a series of countries and regions which, in one way or another, we found themselves in similar situations. The positive experience of South Tyrol, Israel, and Serbia must be carefully studied. We must take the best and integrate it into our situation. Behind all the platform rhetoric, the conference pursued three goals: to end the diplomatic isolation faced by DPR-LPR. Only two states in the world, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, recognize the DPR and LPR. Now, I couldn't find those two countries on a map if I had to. But neither Abkhazia or South Ossetia are recognized by the rest of the world. I guess the rest of the world can't find them either. to mobilize European public opinion to put pressure on your EU governments, especially Germany and France, to pressure Kiev into accepting existence of the DPR-LPR on terms dictated by the DPR-LPR, i.e. by Moscow. Well, my question is, how are you going to get them to do that? What do you mean put pressure on them? Where's your tanks? Where's your airplanes? I think some of these people are a little drinking Kool-Aid here. I wonder what Davy Duke said about this. To promote economic ties with the DPR-LPR in Europe, the economies of the DPR-LPR suffered from wartime damage, the economic dislocation caused by secession, the economic blockade imposed by Kiev, and the international non-recognition of the DPR-LPR. And reflecting their own politics in doing so, in pursuing such goals as the DPR-LPR authorities saw as their natural allies, the European far right, with old-time Stalinists from Caesarea and Die Linke, provided an extra helping hand. The Nantes conference involved political forces which unfortunately count for something in the real world. The same cannot be said of other conferences held in the city of Alchevsk, three days later in solidarity with the DPR and the LPR. By all accounts, it was a very sad affair. Entitled International Solidarity Forum, Anti-Fascism, Internationalism, and Solidarity, the one-day conference had been initiated in early April by a meeting of the Forum of Communist Socialist Workers, Environmental, Anti-Fascist Forces, led in Lugansk. The April forum had been organized by the Lugansk Communist Party. Most of it, if not all, the 31 people who attended the event appear to have been or close to the LCP as well. Their politics were reflected in a statement issued by the April forum. Quote, the red traditions of the region, from Clement Voroshilov to the present day, have always been strong in our land, and just as in 1917, Lugansk should be a harbinger of the coming globe left turn, unquote. Voroshilov was a military commander who played a central role in Stalin's purges. He denounced his own colleagues and subordinates and wrote personally to exile officers to lure them back to their death. He signed 185 execution lists, the fourth highest of the entire Stalinist leadership. Seems like that would make it a little hard for Stalinism to make a big comeback. Attendees at the International Solidarity Forum included a delegation from the British Solidarity with Anti-Fascist Resistance in the Ukraine campaign. That's a mouthful. That campaign includes the members of the avowed Trotskyite organizations and Workers' Power and Socialist Appeal. If there had been members of these organizations in the Soviet Union in the 1930s, Voroshilov would have had them shot, every last one of them. A subsequently issued invitation to attend the International Solidarity Forum declared rather confusingly, quote, with the joint efforts of our organizations and movements, with the broad support of the masses, we will be able to achieve our main goal to mark Lugansk region a socialist land. We're open to cooperation with all patriotic forces ready to join our struggle, unquote. According to the conference organizer, an LCP Lugansk City First Secretary, Maxim Chalenko, over 200 communist, socialist, left patriotic, and anti-fascist forces from around the world were invited to attend the conference. Wow. Late last April, Chalenko was boasting that 37 organizations from 16 countries had agreed to attend. In the event, 177 people from 31 organizations from 13 countries made it to the conference. The conference report did not list the organizations, but there were some familiar faces at the event. Platform speakers, including the members of the Lugansk Guards and the Ukrainian Stalinist organization Boratba, who had spoken at the first of the Yalta conferences organized last year by Nova Rus, According to the final conference report, the event was attended by nationalists of Belarus, Britain, Germany, Greece, Spain, Italy, Poland, Russia, the Basque Country, Turkey, Ukraine, France, and Sweden. The venue of the conference was to have been the city of Lugansk, but the LPR authorities banned it from the city. According to Chelenko, this was a decision by a group of anti-communist officials who did not want to see Lugansk follow the socialist path of development. We're almost through, boys and girls. A new venue of the conference was found in Alchevsk, run as a virtual personal fiefdom of Alexei Mozgovoy, commander of the Ghost Brigade. Is it ghost because there's nobody in it? Mozgovoy said that he had been threatened with arrest, imprisonment, and execution by LPR officials for allowing the conference to be held there. Someone was as good as their word. Mozgovoy was murdered in what was, even by LPR standards, a particularly brutal killing a fortnight later. Conditions in Alchevsk were less than welcome. There was a power cut through the city when the attendees arrived. Planned hotel accommodations were placed by accommodation in a former hostel for factory workers, and water is available in Alchevsk only for a couple of hours in the mornings. The conference attendees were also unable to take part in the Second World War Victory Day parade on the day after their conference. They were unwelcome in Lugansk, and the parade planned by Alchevsk was canceled at the insistence of the LPR authorities. Further problems occurred even once the conference was underway. One participant wrote, quote, "There were problems with the translator, and the contributions from the platform speakers were hardly serious scientific contributions," unquote. The conference opened with a speech from Mozgovoy himself, in which he appealed for unity in the pursuit of the common goal, the struggle against fascism. "A free person, a free people," he concluded, "cannot be banned from telling the truth." A fortnight later, he was dead. Mozgovoy was followed by a succession of speeches that were largely consisted little more than words: imperialism, fascism, USA, junta, Kiev, anti-fascism, anti-imperialism, internationalism, and unity rearranged in various combinations. "All the misfortunes of the Greek people flow from the USA, the EU, and NATO. The Kiev regime is a puppet of the American imperialism," explained one of the speakers from Greece. According to an Italian speaker, the Atlantic Pact sows chaos and is leading to the creation of an open fascist regimes in Europe. "The people of Donbass are the first to raise their weapons against this." Another Italian speaker denounced non-governmental organizations for being the Trojan horse of Western imperialism and for playing a major role in what happened in Kiev, not a revolutionary, but a state push. A representative of the People's Front of Turkey, whose members had already fought against the American aggressors in Iraq and Palestine, explained that the world consisted of two sides, the EU and the USA, and the ordinary people who have to resist global enslavement. According to another speaker from Italy, the neoliberal empire of the EU cannot be reformed or democratized. It must be destroyed, and the countries of Southern Europe must form a new and fair union of the Mediterranean. There were warm words for Russia at the conference as well. "We are glad that we, the LPR of Russia, Putin, is the greatest individual," enthused the Lugansk, the young guard speaker. Many, in fact, most of the speeches would hardly have been out of place at a conference held in Donetsk 3 days later. The invocations of communism and socialism would not have gone down very well, but the ritualistic stock and trade denunciations of the USA, the EU, and NATO, globalization, imperialism, and Ukrainian fascism, all invoked to justify support for Novorossiya, whom certainly have found a receptive audience. However, late in the day it might be, the overlap in the substance of the platform speeches at Donetsk and the Alchevsk conferences and the political composition of the former should provoke the pro-Novorossiya left into asking itself a straightforward question. Is there anything even vaguely socialist about its endless apologies for the one-party puppet states of the DPR-LPR, which find their natural political allies in the European right? Well, that's it, boys and girls, on that one. That was a long one. Didn't seem like there was too much to it. Not too much to it. Well, one of our subscribers, one of our supporters, has sent us in a white health report here. Now I'm going to read it to you. All drugs have two names, a trade name and generic name. Example, the trade name is Tylenol and the generic name is acetaminophen. Aleve is also called naproxen. Amoxil is also called amoxicillin, and Advil is called ibuprofen. The FDA has been looking into the generic name for Viagra. After careful consideration by a team of government experts, it recently announced that it has settled on the generic name of Micoxaflopin. Oh, that snuck up on me. Also considered Micoxaphalin or Midexidripin, Midexazine, Dixafix, and of course, Ibipokin. Pfizer Corporation announced today that Viagra will soon be able in liquid form and will be marketed by Pepsi-Cola as a power beverage suitable for use as a mixer. There you go. It will now be possible for a man to literally pour himself a stiff one. Obviously, we can no longer call this soft drink, and it gives new meaning to the names of cocktails, highballs, and just good old-fashioned stiff drink. Pepsi will market the new concoction by the name of Mount and Dew. Thought for the day, there is more money being spent on breast implants than Viagra today than on Alzheimer's research. This means that by 2020, there should be a large elderly population with perky boobs and huge erections and absolutely no collection of what to do with them. If you don't send this to five old friends right away, there will be five fewer people laughing in this world. Okay, thank you for sneaking up on me on that one. And that came from a she-wolf. Well, that's it for today. I'm running out of steam. I was all over the place today, and I'm not going into the sad affair, but believe me. Plus, my lady's battery went bad, and we were stuck in a hot parking lot for 2.5 hours waiting on the AAA to come around because she took the spare battery that I always keep in cars out like I told her not to. So I wasn't too happy about that. But since she fixes the meals, I don't bitch too much. That's it, boys and girls. 14-5. I'll see you tomorrow.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. I hope, dear,
And every time I go to the zoo, I get mad. Because those are our animals. It pisses me off. Lock up your shit. Lock up a goat. It pisses me off when I see all the lions and zebras, all that pretty African shit. You guys lock them up. And black folks, believe me, they belong to us. They try to disassociate us. They belong to us. Fuck some Ziegfeld and fucking Roy in Vegas and shit. That shit is ours. When I go to the zoo, I get mad. If you don't believe me, take 12 or 10 niggas to the zoo. Watch the animals. When they see that many black people, they get crazy. They think they're going home. Start jumping up and shit and hopping. And when they see white people, they do like you. They just stare. She was staring. See, I told you I got drunk. I didn't miss shit. She's had two or three white meetings with her boyfriend. I'm just... This is a bit much. Nigger. But I can take it. My ancestors were slaves. You can stare at me all night. I know the deal. Yes. Didn't they stare at us during slavery? It's my job to make white people mad. That's my job. I said, nigga, we want you to go to Earth and piss off white folks. Gotcha, St. Peter. But don't worry about it. I'm being punished. I live in a white neighborhood. I'm being punished. Don't worry. I am. I got to move. I got to move. They will not go to sleep till I come home. Sometimes I don't come home for a week. They're up in pajamas looking for me. Where is he? You can't make me go to sleep. Where is he? And this is an illusion. I'm not a nigga. This is an illusion. In reality, I'm a wolf. I was bitten by a wild nigga. I'll be fine in the morning. Come visit me at the zoo tomorrow. God, I'm just tripping. This city is a trip. It's hard for a black man to get a cab here. I didn't know this is like New York and everywhere else. It's strange. What the fuck is going on? Cabs try to run me over trying to pick up somebody white. That's some wild shit. It's true. You have to hire somebody white to get one for you. Some cold shit, ain't it? These motherfuckers can hardly speak English trying to have attitude. What are you going? Where are you going? No, where is your green card, motherfucker? Bitch, where are you going? To your mama's house, motherfucker. What are you going? And I just want to, I'm being honest, see, but see, it bothers me. I don't know whether the white people can relate to it because it doesn't happen to you, so I don't know if you can relate to it. But when the shit happens to you, then it's going to be a different motherfucking story.